This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place Nation Pop Experience. Welcome back to Pop Goes to the Couch. We are talking about WandaVision. We are up to episode 6. That's right. We are two-thirds of the way through this wonderful TV episodic program on the Disney Plus. This episode is called All New Halloween Spooktacular. I think it is an episode that lots of us were looking forward to because we had an inkling from some of the previews or promos of this was going to be the episode we see the original costumes as teased from the comics, and they did deliver. But speaking of delivering, let's get the rest of the crew in here so they can deliver the goods and break down this very episode. First off, we got Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean.
Good evening. I am looking forward to hearing everybody's thoughts on some of the pretty crazy stuff we saw in this episode, because I feel like it shattered some of my thoughts and what I thought was happening, and some of this stuff, I don't know where it's going at this point, so I'm really curious to hear what everybody on the show thinks about some of that stuff. So it should be a good one.
Yeah, there's lots going on, and this is one of those blink if you miss it episodes too. They really dropped a lot in the backgrounds that people are breaking down and kind of losing their mind over. Also is Scott Shiflett. What's going on, Scott?
This is not Scott Shiflett. This is your favorite master luchador.
Carne asada? Or chili con carne?
Exactly. Chili en carne.
Well, buenos noches. Gracias for being here. I don't know. That's my fluent Spanish. So, 3 years in high school. Not bad. And joining us as well, rounding out our group, is Tim Capel. Hey, Tim.
May, I took French, me, so I cannot help you and participate in this conversation. A lot to dive into here on the Spooktacular, borrowed, by the way, from our friends at Place to Be Nation with the Halloween specials annually, 10 years strong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. All right, so this episode opens with an homage to Malcolm in the Middle, which is a series I actually did not watch, but it's through the perspective of a child in a camcorder. They are the episode will be done matter more of a contemporary television with, Billy being the kind of giving the tour after the thing, the stressed out mom, the distracted dad, the bland brother, the charming deadbeat uncle, while the pop punk blares in the soundtrack. We see the family is getting ready for All Hallows Eve. Agnes makes her way into the opening credits for the first time. And we see, Pietro as himself. Sean, what did you think of this opening sequence to this episode?
I didn't watch Malcolm in the Middle either, but I did know the opening of the show, and I thought it was pretty cool. So I guess we're in what, guys? Late 90s, mid-90s, early 2000s? I assume we're in the 90s at this point, right?
I think we're in the late 90s to early 2000s. Yeah, turn of the century kind of thing. Like, this is a series that started in the 90s, but crossed over, I guess you might want to say.
No, it started in 2000, and that's what threw me.
So
there's a lot of things that threw me in this episode.
It completely threw me, because I'm like, okay, what 90s show are we doing? And at first, I thought my so-called life for some reason. Even though I did
as well.
So
Sam.
You got it was... too, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't even watch a lot of that, but for some reason, I'm like, well, it's got to be the 90s, so it's probably that. But then I literally just watched that opening again while we were talking on mute, and I'm like, this is completely Malcolm in the Middle. Like, there's no the font is exactly the same, the camcorder, the quick cuts, the opening first person point of view kind of narration with I guess it was Billy. I was like, oh, there's like no question. And the weird cutaway gags that they would do.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we skipped the 90s, because I don't think most people would think of that as a 90s show at all.
Well, comicbook.com said, no, I'm just kidding.
I don't think there's a specific formula that they're following. They have to follow.
Sure.
I think it's up to their own rules. Here's another question, though. Do you think what we get the previous line, do you think those are actually recaps, or is that preparing us for the upcoming episode? Because based on the bits and pieces that they choose to put into previously on.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, what do you think of the open?
I thought it was Malcolm in the Middle as well. Also got a little Grounded for Life vibe from it, which is another, you know, early 2000s show. So it seems we skipped the 1990s if we're doing this in order. But I read that people think they skipped the 90s because 90s were more ensemble and Wanda has no friends.
Oh, wow. All
right. Is that comicbook.com that stated that?
It might have been. I don't know. I'd look at a, like, once I watch these shows on Friday, I do, like, deep dives for the next, like, 3 or 4 days where I'm just looking at the most random stuff. It could have been comicthebook.com or any of these sites.
Comic the book. Discovered or covered or whatever. Nerdist. Well, there's just so many plays out there you don't know who to believe. But it all helps spark the conversation.
I mean, you could also look at it as she grew up in the 90s and, like, war-torn Sokovia or whatever, and perhaps does not have fond memories of American sitcoms from the 90s, given what was going on in her own life. And, you know, she's probably gotten all of this information secondhand about these shows. She probably watched them. Maybe she binge-watched them while she was on fucking house arrest after Lagos. Who knows? But, you know, the 90s... probably not a particularly standout decade, a highlight from her own life, you know, given what we know about her history. So I don't know, probably reading too much into it. They did sort of, you know, Full House. We got a little bit of that last episode, and that, you know, started in the 80s, spilled over into the 90s. You could talk about Who's the Boss also, like, when did that end? I don't remember, but maybe the 90s. Idea is we already covered the 80s and the 90s, basically, so fuck it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe, like, you know, when she was on the run and, say, maybe she was watching these shows, maybe she didn't watch any 90s sitcoms, maybe, you know, just selective, you know, who knows. But, Tim, what do you think of the beginning, opening of this episode?
Yeah, I guess I've pretty much covered it. I was looking for, okay, we're going to have, like, maybe Roseanne, or are they even going to try to do, like, The Simpsons, maybe? So it just threw me that we skipped right to 2000s with Malcolm in the Middle, which, I mean, is so obvious now. But I was just, like, my head was kind of spinning for a while there. And I probably was preoccupied with it for entirely too long. So now I'm just like, it is what it is.
The other thing I liked is immediately in the intro, they kind of showed Pietro, and you can already tell that he's going to be the goofball, like, house guest brother, because that's how they portray him in the opening in the video of the intro to the show. So you kind of know what role he's going to play before he's even started acting in it yet.
So yeah, he was kind of the Uncle Jesse in the previous, like, 2 minutes. He's more of, like, you know, who was that, goofball in that step-by-step show? He was like that older cousin or something like that.
Cody.
He's like kind of like that. Yeah, like the troublemaker. He's like a man-child kind of thing.
Yeah,
definitely see that. So we get it's Halloween, and we have Billy talking to the camera, kind of explaining, and Tommy, you know, kind of messing with him a little bit. Pietro's sleeping on the couch, and then we get you know, him kind of messing with them. They think he's a vampire, and he yells, "Blood's thicker than water." Or whispers it, or says it, I don't know. Anyway, so Wanda comes in, enters with a dime store spandex version of her original comics costume, and claims that she's a Sokovian fortune teller. As she announces, Pietro mentions a childhood trick-or-treat outing in Sokovia that features a flashback of them getting a fish from a creepy old lady from which they developed typhus. Wanda says she doesn't remember it that way. Pietro says it's because she's suppressed the trauma. Then in comes Vision, also decked out in his original comic book duds. You know, he claims that, you know, it was the only cop clothes he had in his closet. And as Scott made reference to, that he's a dressed as a Mexican luchador, and kind of get a Addams Family homage right there. Kind of how, you know, Gomez and Morticia would speak to each other in French. They kind of speak to each other in Spanish and get a little worked up. And then, you know, I love Pietro shotgunning a soda with the boys. That was like, I didn't even know you could shotgun soda. And I said, I would think, why would you ever want a shotgun of soda? I mean, I've shotgun many of beers in my time. I couldn't believe that. So, Scott, what do you think of the beginning? And we get the costumes, we get Pietro, you know, Slacker, Manchild. What do you think of this top of this episode?
Well, I loved the flashback that they showed with Pietro and Wanda. And it looked like they were dressed as Nick Fury and
Scarlett
Johansson's character, Black Widow. Yes. And it looked like they were dressed as them, which is pretty interesting. You don't know if what's real or what's not. That could have been just the image suppressed in her memory or implanted there by whoever's truly running this. I did enjoy, like, you know, Pietro being like you said, the slack ass brother, like the crazy doofus uncle. So it's nice with that. And we can tell that Wanda and Vision are still not on the same page from where they left off in last week's episode. It's even mentioned by Billy immediately that they're not on the same page. So it's definitely interesting. Not everything Tim, is as it seems. Sorry.
That's okay. No, finish your thought. Tim, what do you think of this part?
Yeah, well, it's fun to see Wanda and Vision in their comics accurate, quote unquote, costumes. Also, sort of a reminder why we don't exactly see these as they originally appeared in the films. But it's nice nonetheless to have that little nod. But to say that Vision is a luchador, it's pretty great. Because I'm like, yeah, I guess he kind of does look like a Mexican wrestler in that strange getup. So I got a kick out of that. Again, yeah, the weird cutaway gag, which is Peter / Pietro telling a story from their childhood that does not really jive with Wanda's recollection. So it makes you wonder, is this just something he's making up? Or is this something he does remember and she does not, because they have completely separate histories? Hard to say. Vision, with his sort of snide comment about this was the only thing in the closet, to Scott's point, even Billy remarks on the fact that his parents, well, they're not exactly fighting, because these are kids who are of an age where they don't exactly understand passive aggressivism, but that very much seems to be what's going on here in their marriage now, between Wanda and Vision, sort of just bickering, right, back and forth, where they're not having the huge blow up that they started to have at the end of last episode, but they sure haven't resolved things either. And Vision still very much has his doubts, and it's going to be acting with some autonomy, as we'll see throughout this episode.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sean, I know you were very excited about this scene.
Well, the comics throwback is great with the costumes. I think Wanda in her outfit is very hotchy, and it overtakes the magic show outfit she was wearing at the end of the train. So yeah, definitely enjoyed that. I did enjoy the Vision. Like, these two in these costumes take me back to their initial limited series, which, you know, Tim and I just talked about on another pod, Shrink Wrap. So it was really cool comics throwback to see this. But yeah, the kids talking about, hey, their parents haven't really been on the same page. They haven't really been arguing. I thought that was kind of a nice little nod that Tim just made about Pietro recollecting something from their childhood that Wanda didn't remember it that way, which, again, I think a good point is, well, if this is Pietro, maybe he has that memory, because quite honestly, they both have separate families, even though he is a version of Quicksilver. So yeah, pretty solid stuff here to open it up, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then Vision informs Wanda, though, that he's not going to collect candy with the boys, but will be on neighborhood watch to prevent devilish festivities. Wanda is obviously disappointed. Pietro volunteers, though, to step in as a father figure. He, you know, goes and gets a costume with Tommy, and they come back in matching ones, matching, you know, the original Quicksilver costume. Then we cut to the edge of Westview, where the hex is turning ominously yellow and all the feds are panicking. Hayward tells Monica that they need to take Wanda out, but Monica points out that they don't know what will happen to all the mind-controlled townsfolk if they're, you know, I guess, captor, quote-unquote, dies. Hayward counters that Monica has had too much affection for superpowered individuals, citing her help with Captain Marvel. And this is people like Monica who disappeared in the blip. Thus, they don't know how hard it was or what had to be done while they were gone. Just to show her that, you know, he's, you know, kind of, you know, he's, I think Hayward's starting to show his true colors here, because he says it was good that Monica wasn't around when her mom died of cancer, because she doesn't have the stomach for the job. She and the rest of, you know, Jimmy and Darcy are booted off the base and they're being escorted. And then there's, you know, Jimmy and Monica beat up their captors. Darcy is not in on the plan, I guess, that they had. And they somehow steal some sword ponchos and get back into the operating area. So, Tim, we get Vision dropping, you know, that he's got something to do. And you know, Wanda buys it, and then we get kind of what's going on outside the Hex, where they're kind of scrambling now after they basically got bitch slapped by Wanda.
Yeah, I sort of like this disagreement that Wanda and Vision had. Obviously, he has rather ulterior motives, and he is straight up lying to her, but she's just sort of looking at it from the standpoint of, these are our kids. This is our first Halloween. A completely, like, realistic, grounded, domestic dispute, right? Like, you could totally see this being an argument that actual parents would have, right? So it just adds that little element of realism to it, I thought, where you almost forget that, you know, this is a very elevated type of universe where supernatural shenanigans are taking place. It's like, and it just goes to show how great Elizabeth Olsen is and has been as a performer throughout this series. Just a tour de force, the way she's able to flip back and forth between an actor who is like playing an actor within the show and then showing her true colors at the same time, and just being able to turn on a dime. I've been just incredibly impressed with her, and I don't think we've talked about that enough, although, you know, Sean has certainly emphasized other attributes that people have appreciated about her. But just want to give it up to her, like, as an actor, because she's been, like, killing it here. And in that scene, I just kind of thought it was a standout. Okay, back in the real world, the sword stuff. I'm just going to come straight out and say that I hated this. It just felt like very manufactured conflict just for the sake of having conflict. Like, oh no, we can't have this big monolithic intelligence organization without them being the bad guys, essentially. So of course they must have an antagonistic relationship with our plucky heroes, where there's no need to do this. Like, our conflict, we know what our conflict is. We know what we need to focus on. And this is just like this little, like, side order of nonsense is not what I need in this show. Just have these people working towards a common goal, cooperating, being the smartest people in the room that they are. And it's fine. Like, we'd be on board with that. We don't need this fake, oh, they have to be the real good guys who we side with, because apparently every, like, organized group of some kind of authority figures within the Marvel Cinematic Universe has to be evil. Like, we did it with S.H.I.E.L.D., that turned out to be Hydra. We did it with the whole, what was the Avengers, like, World Council thing in the first movie, which I guess was technically Hydra too. And it's just, could we just get away from this? It's so, this is the type of thing you do in a dumber show. This show and this universe is smarter than that. And I just, and the whole, like, oh, now we're going to fight our way out and punch the guys and take over their tank. I don't know what it was, their armored car, and still be able to hack in and do what we're going to do anyway. Like, it was just, there was so, just no need for this. No need for any of this whatsoever. Right. And I don't know why it's there.
Sean?
The word Tim is describing is tropey. It's overdone. The big government you know, organization is the heel with their big bad Hayward. I mean, how many movies, I think I talked about it on the last podcast, how many TV series or movies have we seen this play out? I'm hoping there's more to it. I would hope Marvel's smarter than, you know, wash, rinse, repeating a storyline we've already seen with S.H.I.E.L.D. and many other things, but I'm not so sure. We've also seen Hayward characters. I mean, you go back to Robert Redford, I think, what, was it Civil War, whatever it was, whatever, Winter Soldier. Yeah. Winter, you know, Soldier. I feel like, yeah, so I feel like we're just replaying that whole thing. So I 100% agree with Tim on that.
Well, it's, you know, not,
yeah,
I'm sorry. I guess what bothers me, it is very tropey, and I was sort of dancing around using that word, I guess, but because we did express reservations about this, I think, in our last episode. But you compare it, you brought up Civil War, the movie, you compare it to something like that, where you see basically the United States government, who have a very valid position. Like, of course you would want to keep these, you know, superpowered organizations in check somehow, to have some kind of accountability. Like, that makes all the sense in the world. And yeah, the Avengers have been doing a good job, but they're also very cavalier in how they conduct themselves. So it was a very, like, nuanced, very, like, believable conflict for, again, this world of superheroes and crazy things going on a daily basis. And you're like, that's the kind of conflict I want to see more of, where each side really has a very valid position and perspective that they're coming from. And I guess they tried to hand wave it with the whole, you weren't around for the 5 years after the blip and things were really shitty, but I don't know. It just feels like they didn't put in the work to get us to that point. And these just feel like generic shitty bad guys, just like Hydra by way of S.H.I.E.L.D. was. So,
yeah.
Which, I mean, was fine for that movie because they had never really done that kind of thing before. But to just keep going back to that well feels like a dumb thing you do in a dumb TV show.
Yeah, and so the only other thing I would add to this part of it is, obviously Vision isn't going out to be like the neighborhood watch. He's going to be up to something, which is, you know that's coming. And I also did pop big time for Quicksilver and Speed, having the Quicksilver outfit on and the other one having the Wicked outfit on. So I thought that was also kind of neat in their costumes.
All right. Scott?
Yeah, the only thing I have to add, I think Tim and Sean got it perfectly, but Hayward just went out of his way to be a dick talking about Monica's mom dying. Like, come on, like, we know you're supposed to be like the asshole, mm-hmm. but like, it kind of frustrates me, like how Tim was saying, because I think I said a couple episodes ago, I hope they don't go that way, and it looks like they're going this way of, like, you know, as the tropey part with that, because we've seen it too many times. But like, he's just like, I guess we need, until we find the true bad guy, we just need a temporary bad guy for right now. He's just like a mini boss, and we're going to see the real boss sooner than later.
Yeah, we need an antagonist, basically.
Yeah.
A shit stirrer.
Yep.
All right, so we go back into Westview. Wanda and Pietro are wandering the streets while the boys scrounge around for candy and treats. It's full of children. We haven't seen children yet inside the Hex. Wanda asks Pietro about a specific kid they knew in the orphanage, and Pietro thinks she's testing him because he looks different. She asks why he does look that way, but before she can get a satisfying answer, she sees Herb dressed up as Frankenstein's monster. He's working the neighborhood watch. According to him, though, Vision is not actually participating. And he says to her, "You want something changed?" She asks oddly. And, and we cut to Vision, though, and we see him walking away from the center of Westview and sees a house where two adult residents are in the midst of chores, putting up a decoration and putting out something. But they seem to be stuck in a loop where they can only perform little actions over and over. And the woman, it's a man and woman, one, she has a tear rolling down her frozen face. So it's kind of weird. So, Sean, what do you think of the whole trick-or-treating thing where the things are getting announced before they happen, basically, by Herb, but then Herb kind of asking a question that's kind of weird.
There's like a bunch of like hidden things in this. There's a guy standing behind Wanda that has like a long nose kind of cloak on. I think Scott, yes, or somebody pointed it out. And I'm on that scene right now, and I'm watching it, and he has daggers staring at Wanda. So I don't know if that's something or not, but that's pretty creepy. Vision, obviously not going along with her plan, is going to throw her off. The other thing I really liked in this was Quicksilver, and then they make the kick-ass comment here, which everyone I'm sure has heard about on the internet, where I guess this Quicksilver, the other Quicksilver, I guess they started the kick-ass movie together. Is that right?
Yeah, a long time ago I saw it. I couldn't remember.
So they had that line. So there's some good stuff there. But I love Pietro going around stealing everybody's candy with the kids. That was really funny. And then she's asking Pietro, hey, why are you so different? So there's definitely something wrong in Wanda's head about this Pietro that doesn't resonate. But I can't get over that guy standing, looking at Wanda, just staring at her. There's something there. And I don't know what it is, and I hope I'm not reading too much into it, but there's got to be something with that.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy. I mean, at first you think it may be just like a mannequin or something.
That's what I thought at first until I watched it the second time, and then I don't think so.
Yeah, it is creepy. So, Scott, what do you think of this scene here?
As Sean said, yeah, with that person in the background with the hook nose, definitely staring her down the whole time. And even when Quicksilver is stealing all the candy, everyone else moves, but that thing doesn't move at all. It's just staring, like shooting daggers, as Sean said it, at her. I think that Sean's boy, Mephisto, he had to come up and see what was going on for himself. And what better way than to hide yourself in during Halloween? I just love that part. I remember watching it the first time, like, what is this? What's going on? And as you mentioned, when Vision's on the outskirts of town where Wanda really can't control everything so well, and you see that woman just with the tear going down her face, that is one of the creepier things that's happened in this show, because it shows how trapped these people are, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, it is kind of freaky. Tim?
Yeah, I did not notice our frozen stranger in the background until Scott said something shortly after I'd watched the episode, and I was like, wait, let's go back to that. And really just an arresting image for sure. It almost seems that she acknowledges him, at least passively at one point.
She does turn around.
Yeah, like, over her shoulder. It's like she can't not see him, right? But she doesn't react. I almost wonder if Frankenstein, if his reaction was in response to this onlooker when he, you know, asked Wanda, is there something I can help you with? Do you want something changed? Somewhat reminiscent of the scene with Agnes in our last episode where she's asking Wanda, you want to run that back? Like, you know, should we cut, do that again, have another take? Seemed kind of in that vein with Herb, who we know, because we've seen him gossiping with Agnes, has some kind of degree of awareness that they're supposed to be taking their cues from Wanda, essentially. And she doesn't say anything. I don't know. Maybe it's Ralph, right? Maybe this is our unseen character. That's the way to do it, right? When you have a character you don't know what they look like, you can at least dress them up as something or obscure them in some way. But yeah, he's got that like clockwork orange nose, but he's wearing a cloak that kind of evokes, again, Grim Reaper, which is something that I've sort of gone back and forth on in my mind as having some kind of connection to these events, maybe, comics character. Or we saw, you know, Red Skull, given his fate with the Soul Gem and everything, which might play into something else in this episode. So I'm a little bit all over the place with this. It's one of those, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just another, it's like foreshadowing of how her control is a little bit limited, like we see with Vision on the outskirts of town. People just standing around like mannequins. Maybe he's just kind of an example of that, but is somewhat creepy looking. That may be the extent of it, but yeah, it definitely catches the eye. So one to look out for.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then we get our commercial break. First time we have not seen the same actors. And this is actually, a claymation animated spot for Yo Magic. It has a, we see a kid on a desert island gets a visit from a shades wearing cool dude shark. He offers the lad a cup of yogurt, and the child can't get the foil wrapper off the top for some reason. We see him aged to a skeleton, and he dies trying. It is called the Yo Magic, the snack for survivors. Basically, is he giving everything for, obviously he's eaten before because there's a fish, scales or fish bones on the island. But a lot of talk about these commercials representing Infinity Stone. So maybe this is representing the Soul Stone, like giving up everything for something. Or I don't know. Scott, what did you think of this commercial?
Well, the commercial made me think of like the yogurt commercials they used to have, mm-hmm. like that were on like Nickelodeon during this
Go-Gurt?
Time.
Was it like Go-Gurt?
Yeah.
But they still have that stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And it made me think of that, and like sort of like the, I think Lipton's Iced Tea had like a commercial, like the Claymation commercial. So that was a nice little blast from the past with how they're doing that. Then the commercial got real creepy, as you mentioned, Andy, with just like the kid unable to open the
pick up a rock food. Or a pebble and poke the damn thing.
Yeah.
The fish skeleton. I'll open it for you.
And just dying. So that was, I guess that has to do with the Soul Stone. Yeah, it's for a show that's pretty for a show that hasn't had too much like weird stuff happen. I mean, quote unquote weird stuff happen. Like this is like, I don't know. I enjoy it. I love it. But like this middle part right here is just crazy. Like, cause like now we're looking in for stuff for commercial breaks, and there's definitely something there, but I don't know if we'll be able to figure it out until the end of the show as a whole.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think of the commercial on this one?
Definitely think this one's the most obtuse or impenetrable of the commercials we've seen thus far. If you are buying into the idea that these commercials represent the Infinity Stones, which more and more I think I might be. Have we talked about this on the show? See, I always forget what we've talked about in group.
We talk a lot between pre, post, and chats and stuff.
Yeah, all right. I mean, so, briefly,
it's a theory out there.
Quickly to recap, there is a theory which was not proposed by any of us, but is out there, and then I'm maybe adopting, I don't know, where these commercials within the sitcom universe are representative of each of the six Infinity Stones. So the first one was a toaster, like a smart toaster, and that could be referring to the Mind Stone because of the connection to Vision and how he was always referred to, well, not always, but an in-joke from the comics is that he was just a walking glorified toaster. So smart toaster, Vision, Mind Stone, it all kind of converges. Hydra Watch, I mean, the Time Stone, it's pretty apparent. Hydra Soak, the Calgon takeoff, maybe the Tesseract, the Space Stone, transport yourself away, Calgon, take me away. It's also shaped in a cube, much like the Tesseract in the container that they show. Lagos, reality. When you make a mess, just pretend like it never happened, something along those lines, like rewrite your own reality. You also see the color red very prominently throughout that, which is evocative of the ether. Again, reality stone. This one, if it's soul stone, I mean, the big visual clue is the kid emaciating and turning into a fucking skeleton, right? With the Red Skull with his new job as the custodian or whatever on Vormir, telling people how this process works. And maybe just sort of speaks to the idea that you can be faced with this great power, you can have it within your grasp, but be so consumed with accessing it that you don't know how to. You don't know how to tap into it. And it takes up so much of your focus that it just sort of consumes you, which is maybe what happened to Red Skull, maybe it's what we're seeing happen to Wanda as all of this plays out. Like, she has these tremendous abilities, but is like losing herself in the process, or if someone else is benefiting from all of these shenanigans that are taking place. What's the name of this product? It's called Yo Magic, right? So, and I think the shark at one point says, like, I'm snacking on Yo Magic. So, is somebody feeding off of this? Is somebody gaining power while she withers away? Or is it more of a, like, a spiritual decomposition, spiritual and emotional that is taking place? I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go with this that I don't think the symbolism, if that's all it is necessarily mutually exclusive compared to this theory that they are representative of Infinity Stones. I think both could be equally valid. So I don't know. All that is to say, if there's another commercial and only one more commercial, we'll see if that lines up with the Power Stone in some way. If not, then maybe that's blown out of the water and we all sound, or I sound, very foolish. But so far, I think maybe I'm bought in on that one.
All right. Sean, what do you interpret this commercial as?
So Tim's got a good point. That's a pretty solid interpretation. Here's the way I look at it. If we're going to go to the comics material, and again, this is where I laid down my first comicbook.com theory of the night, I guess. I feel like the shark represents the villain of the show. The children represent, the child either represents Wanda or her children. And a deal is made where the shark obviously gives the child the yogurt, but he can't open it, and of course the child dies. So if I follow the comic mythology, she makes a deal with the devil, and in the end her kids wither away and die. So I'm still hanging on that the shark represents the villain. The child represents either Wanda or the children, and yes, they made a deal, but in the end, you don't win in a deal with the devil. And that represents the kids whittling away. So I'm kind of going to hitch my theory onto that one. However, I think it could go either way with Tim's theory, and at the end of the day, we could all be wrong. But I'm going to go.
Or we could all be right.
Yeah, or we could all be right in some form or fashion. But there is definitely something, I think, with in this commercial, especially, there is something to this commercial that is a bigger deal than I feel with the other ones. That's how I feel.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. So we go back to Westview, where Pietro and Wanda and the twins are exiting a movie theater where the Incredibles and the Parent Trap are playing. And this kind of threw me off, although if you really dig deep, what threw me off was the release. Incredibles came out in 2004, Parent Trap 1998, but what they represent, a family with superpowers and, twin stories. Pietro describes his recent appearance, why he's on the show. Basically, he kind of lays out, what he's doing and why he's here. Come to town unexpectedly, create tension with the brother-in-law, stir up trouble with the Rugrats, and ultimately give you grief. Isn't that what you wanted? And Wanda asked him what happened to his Sokovian accent. He says, what happened to yours? The details are fuzzy as one minute he was getting, shut up in, the battle on Sokovia. And next he was in Westview to help her out. The boys run back, and now it seems like Tommy has gained his own super speed abilities. They say they want to go get more candy, but Wanda allows it, but only if they don't go past Ellis Avenue. So what is beyond Ellis Avenue is the big question up to this point in this episode. So, Tim, what did you think of this little brother-sister talk and the revelation of Tommy's thing and the caveat of Wanda saying, not past Ellis Avenue, which is the Ellis Avenue, Ellis Island? I don't know, but what do you think?
I took Ellis as a reference. There was a President Ellis in Iron Man 3, which was probably itself a reference to Warren Ellis, an Iron Man writer who they took a lot of, the Extremis concept all came from him. Anyway, so where to begin? I just want to talk mainly about the conversation that Wanda and Pietro have, because this is where we see that Peter Maximoff, like other characters we've been exposed to, has more awareness than other folks within the town, perhaps has complete self-awareness. And while he does seem to be, he seems to be here under duress, like he's not afraid to poke the bear. Like, unlike Agnes, unlike these other characters who behave somewhat sheepishly around Wanda, he isn't afraid of her at all, which makes me think there must be a reason with that other than he's just kind of an acerbic, like, brazen kind of person. It just came across as he knows much more than anyone, I think, that we've encountered within this world that she's created. I mean, he straight up spells out what his role with it. It's very meta, right? Where he's explaining what his role within the show is as he acts it out, and just doesn't seem to have any regard for the consequences of that, and is willing to go along with it, but is just telling her, look, I get what I'm here for, and I'll do it, but I'm not going to just be puppeted around. Like, well, let's face it, Vision probably has been up to this point. So I'm not sure where I come down on that just yet. What does that mean for him? Like, was he brought into this by her unwittingly? Was he sent here by, let's say, a higher power? One of those two things must be true. So I'm not quite sure yet myself.
All right. Sean, what did you think of this little exchange and what happens here?
I almost feel like I have to watch rinse repeat what Tim just said. Mm-hmm. It's one or two things. It's like he clearly gives no shits. But I also felt like initially watching last week when he showed up, I was like, there's no way this guy's Pietro. I feel at this point that he is a Pietro, but he's a Pietro from somewhere else. This is why she doesn't remember him, and he made the comment that I felt like you needed me. One minute I'm here, the next minute I'm – he said one minute I'm out in the street, the next minute I'm here. So this might not even be the Pietro from the X-Men movie like everybody's expecting. This could be another completely different Pietro, because what we were talking about before the pod started, the Pietro in the X-Men movie wasn't as abrasive, wasn't as to the point, wasn't as goofy, wasn't – as fun-loving.
He didn't act like this. This was not his personality in the X-Men movies.
No, he was a stoner kind of guy. Just kind of took things in stride, and he had this speed power. So is this a Pietro? I firmly believe this is a Pietro. Is he being controlled by somebody who's kind of using him as the puppet, as a liaison to Wanda? That's possible. And then you brought up the other theory, too. But I believe this is a Pietro, but I don't believe... he's either a different Pietro with an abrasive personality or someone who ends up being, to Tim's point, the higher power, is using him as a liaison to filter what he wants to say to her, because he does poke her bear quite a bit. We're going to see that later where it kind of blows up.
All right. Scott?
Yeah, I think he was sent by whoever is controlling her, and that is definitely interesting. I did like... that Tommy got his powers. That was nice to see. And I'm glad they didn't wait until the last episode where they magically manifest their powers. So it was nice to see that Tommy gets his powers and maybe Billy gets his powers later this episode. But yeah, something's definitely up with Pietro, because he's pushing all her buttons, and it last person that pushed her buttons was thrown out of here. So he should probably be careful.
Yeah.
So,
he's aware.
Go ahead, Andy.
Well, I think he's aware of what is kind of going on. Monica was not. Monica kind of just slipped. You know, she made a fatal mistake that she wasn't aware of. You know, she thought she was trying to help.
She seemed to have a moment of clarity. She got sucked into all this and reconfigured in the way that the townspeople have, but then she had that moment of clarity, which turned into a moment of, oh shit. And we haven't seen that with Pietro/Peter. You're right.
Yeah, I think he's fully aware of what's going on, and he's trying to push your buttons, I think.
And I don't think, I've heard it proposed that maybe this is someone who has just adopted Pietro's form in order to get closer to Wanda. And
but why this Pietro?
Why, yes, exactly. Why would it be this in this image rather than the one that she actually, you know, directly remembers? So that one doesn't really track to me. And I agree, he is a Pietro from somewhere in the multiverse, if that's what we're doing, the multiverse. I do wonder if Marvel is going to be a little bit cagey and try to have it both ways, where they don't come out and say one way or another, yes, he is or he isn't the Fox X-Men Pietro, because sometimes you like to have your cake and eat it too. You know, if you say he's not, then you turn off fans of those movies. If you say he is, you turn off people like me who thinks those movies can fucking die in a fire. So,
most
you know,
of them can.
I get it.
All right. So we go back outside the Hex and we see that our three heroes of the story, I guess, Jimmy, Darcy, and Monica have somehow infiltrated the Sword computer room, or where Darcy hacks into the system fairly easily. She finds that Hayward has developed a way to look into the Hex, and they see that people near the edge of town aren't moving, and that Vision is wandering around that area. Then we then cut back inside, and we see Vision walking around. He asks a woman for answers, and he only gets silence because she's kind of frozen, I guess. He then converts to his, I guess, regular Vision form, and he starts to hear the sound, flies the sky, hears the sound of people below, and then he spots a familiar face, Agnes, and she too is frozen, stuck inside a car. He attempts to make contact, and she appears to be just mobile enough to enter the words, "Town Square Scare." Where is it? "Town Square, I expect," Vision says. She chuckles, lightly got lost, and Vision is like, "You got lost in your, you know, the town you're from." He touches her head like he did to Norm in the last episode, and he seems to awaken her, and she's in a panic, and she looks at him and recognizes him, that he is one of the Avengers, your Vision, and that, "Are you here to help us?" He is bewildered. He says he does want to help, but he has no idea what an Avenger is. She then asks if he's dead. Or she asks if she's dead, and he asks her why, because you are, and then she starts yelling, "Dead, dead, dead," kind of in the same way she was saying, "Stop it, stop it, stop it," or the way that Mrs. Hart was doing it. And she then points out that Wanda won't even let us think about leaving the town, and then she cackles like a witch that she's dressed as. Desperate Vision then puts her back to where she was. She looks right at him with a kind of a terrifying smile and declares, "Okie dokie, neighbor," and drives away. Happy Halloween. She kind of does a Yui, and we see the sign that says Ellis Avenue, and we're like, uh-oh, what are we doing here? So, Sean, what do you think of this, where Darcy apparently, you know, is an incredible hacker, Vision is getting a little freaked out, and then we see Agnes for the first time this episode since the open.
Creepy little scene here with, so apparently if Wanda is controlling it, her powers only reach a certain limit of how much she controls with an individual. So it's kind of like we saw earlier, the woman with the tears, which is really creepy. Now we see all these figures frozen, and Wanda's, apparently her full powers or her full mind is not reaching this barrier that's next to Ellis, which is clearly where the outside, where Sword is at. But the Agnes thing, you know, I'm not sure about Agnes at this point. I keep going back and forth. I feel like she's part of the greater scale. We still haven't seen her husband, Ralph, which leads me to believe she's part of the whatever higher powers in this. And I almost feel like this was kind of a charade that they did with Vision, but if it's a charade, why would she, it's almost like she's doing a charade to kind of make sure Vision does what he's supposed to do. And he touches her like he did with Norm, and she reacts, "Oh my God, you're an Avenger." And Vision has no idea what that means or anything. for me, I guess the most confusing thing coming out of this scene for me is I don't know how I feel about Agnes, who she is, why she is, or what her part in this whole thing is. There's a bigger role for her, and I'm not sure if it's – she's not one of these townspeople. There's something else with her, and this scene just – it's almost like a swerve. Like, I feel like this scene is a swerve. That's the last thing I'll say about it.
Yeah. Scott?
See, I'm jumping off that Agnes is a bad guy train with this. I think she was driving through the town when Wanda did what she did, and that's why she is lost. Sorry, I'm getting feedback. Are you guys hearing double me?
Little echo. Okay. Sorry about
connection. Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought it was me. I hate the sound of my voice. Anyway, but no, I'm jumping off the bandwagon with that, with Agnes being part of Team Bad. As she seemed terrified with that. And then Vision had said before that in a couple episodes that he hadn't remembered who he was. And this confirms it because she said, "You're part of the Avengers." And he says, "What's the Avengers?" And then she scares him saying, "You're dead." And like, she thinks they're all dead. So I think that they are, that this is a brand new Vision. We might have talked about this before, but this is something entirely made up. This is not the Vision we had. It may be his body, but like, his mind is something else. Yeah, that's it. Tim?
Okay. So on the one hand, I can see your point of view, which I think a lot of people share, and that they're off the Agnes train now. Which is to say, she was in on it from the start. She was, if not directly controlling events, then pushing them in places they needed to go, where she was maybe working on behalf of someone. And now we see when she gets the whammy put on her by Vision, seems quite terrified. It's very similar to that scene in the last episode where she kind of seemingly breaks out of the trance and is just as mystified as pretty much every other town person and as Vision himself. That's where I was for a while. Like, I have complex feelings about this scene. And I think maybe Sean cracked the case for me without realizing it himself. And as I watch it back and think back to some of the conversations we have had over the Agnes of it all, which is, what have we harped on over and over and doing these reviews? It's that Agnes always seems to be in the right place at the right time to move the plot forward, the plot of the show itself that we're watching and the show within the show of WandaVision. And so when you look at how Vision actually responds to this encounter, when you look at what happens next and you reconcile that with Agnes always being in the right place at the right time to make things fall into place, I'm like, oh, this was completely by design. They think they're swerving us, but no, she is still continuing to play her part. And she is essentially an actor here, where she comes out of her trance when she says what she says to Vision, causing him to do what he's going to do. She was acting. And I think more and more I'm sticking to that. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to jump ahead in our review, but when we see what happens next, this Agnes scene makes all the sense in the world to me. And I think it's consistent with our reading of her up to this point.
All right. So our trio is back in the base, and Monica says she has a way back into the hex, which Jimmy will help her with by hotwiring a car, something he is, again, very good at. Darcy says she's found Monica's blood work and sees that the experience in Westview are remapping her at a cellular level. Monica, though, is undeterred and says that she has to help Wanda. Darcy says she'll hang back and find something in the computer that can help them, and then she'll meet up with them as soon as she can. We go into the Town Square Scare is a little carnival type setup downtown. Pietro notes that there haven't been any kids around before tonight. He runs through his assumption that Wanda's kept them all sleeping safe in their homes up until, an event where they could have a nice time, such as Halloween. You handled the ethical considerations of this scenario as best you could, he adds. He asks how she pulled all this off, and she replies that she doesn't remember. She just recalls being completely alone, empty, just endless nothing. She turns to look at her brother and sees that he now has bullet holes through his torso and the cold face of a corpse. All right. So, Scott, let's start with you. What do you think of, the realization that Monica, is changing her inside, and that, Pietro is kind of asking some interesting questions, and we get this kind of little scary image here.
Yeah, this has been hinted at with Monica two episodes ago, where her CT scan was blank, showed nothing but like white space, and they needed to do her blood work again, and she was like, "I'll just do it later. I don't have time for this." So it's definitely something that's going on with her being a photon. Eventually, we'll see if it's more and more hints that that's going to take place. And I think the show has been damn near perfect, but they got, I'm bringing up the word tropey again. They got tropey again with, instead of them just leaving together, they have to leave Darcy behind while they go. And what is she going to do? Just hit him over the head with a keyboard or something? So, like, she's like, "Oh, I'll just hang out here." It's like, they were wanting you gone 35 minutes ago. Like, what the hell are you doing? So that kind of, like, frustrates me when TV shows have to do that. That kind of just took me out of it. But I did like with them talking about the kids, because Pietro even said, "Oh, you put all the kids to sleep," because last episode, even Vision was like, "There's no kids that live in this neighborhood," and now the neighborhood's full of kids. So it's just great. Like, and Wanda's still playing like, "Oh, I don't know. I was just in a bad place when I did all this stuff." And the segment of, like, it was like seeing Vision dead all over again, which was jarring. And it was seeing him with the gunshots. But it's just, I don't know if it's maybe the Vision in the different universe that, I mean, not the Vision, but the Pietro in the different universe got shot up as well. There's definitely something with that. And I hope this is explained in the last three episodes.
All right. Tim?
So, yeah, very telling conversation here between, I never know what to call him, Peter or Pietro, and Wanda. Again, I'm just watching it back now as we talk about it with the sound off, and I'm looking at his body language, and it's just so flippant. Like, he does not give two shits about her or their supposed history or anything. Like, she says something that is, like, meant to be somewhat profound and touching, and you would think that someone who's actually connected to her, related to her in some way, would be like, "Oh, yeah." And he just kind of looks away, looks off to the side, like, "Oh, I guess so, if you say so." So, yeah, it's just, it's so obvious that he is not at all what he appears to be. And it's weird, the bullet hole flash that she has, much like dead pale Vision with his head caved in a few episodes back. I don't think that's necessarily reflective of something that actually happened to this guy, but it's something that she remembers and is some way maybe a reminder of what she stands to lose. It only happens because she starts talking about bad feelings, basically. And I know that's an oversimplification, but she starts to talk about sadness. And it seems like sadness is not really allowed in this reality. It seems to be the common thread that unites us all here in this world of Westview, but is it really allowed to be examined or dissected in any way? And when it does come up, it's like, "Ooh, sadness, bad. This is what that looks like." And it's, a corpse riddled with bullets, or a synthesoid with his head caved in. Very, striking type of stuff that you want to turn away from. It's revolting. So, like, I don't know. Maybe that's the key to all of this. At the end of the day, like, someone doesn't want her reflecting on her true feelings, her reality. And it's like every now and then when she tries to, this is what she sees that like pushes her away from it. As far as the stuff back in, you know, the real world, I definitely share Scott's view that more silly, just tropey nonsense, where we've all got to split up type of stuff, stupid. Monica is going through a transformation, and I mean, they couldn't have made it more blatantly clear that she is developing powers. They kind of emphasize that in a strange way with her lab readings, where it's like, well, your cells look like this, and that's very abnormal. And she's like, I've seen cancer cells. I've seen cells during remission. I'm not worried about it. And I don't know, like, we've seen a lot of superhero origins, and they tend to not get into the mechanics of how someone is physiologically changed. I don't know if that means anything necessarily here, but bottom line is, I guess we're going to see her with powers before all is said and done in this series, or, you know, to be explored later on.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sean, what do you think of this part?
Not much more to add on the outside stuff, and Monica getting her powers obviously this way, and leaving Darcy by herself, which, you know, is going to set up something that's going to happen. So again, more, I don't know if I won't say tropey, but lazy storytelling, maybe, so to speak. Not to put a negative on this show at all, it's a great show, but just some of this outside stuff just feels a little bit forced.
That's a good way to put it. Lazy.
Yeah. On the outside, in the inside, again, the Quicksilver thing is, I just can't quite put my finger on which way I want to go, because it's like when they showed him as the dead Quicksilver with the bullets riddled, obviously that's a reference to her real brother Quicksilver, who died, but he's not that Quicksilver. So is this the person that's kind of manipulating and pulling the strings, making her see this? Is this Quicksilver so flippant? So it's almost like he's either this flippant in what his reality is, or again, whoever's controlling the puppet strings is kind of working through him to get through to Wanda. And it's just, I just can't figure this one out. I'm going to have to see one more episode before I can really justify what this Quicksilver is. I do think he is a Quicksilver, but I don't know if he's really controlling who he is, or if he's just some flippant Quicksilver from some other universe. I haven't figured it out yet. And then the dead body riddled with bullets kind of threw me off there. So that definitely threw me off my game.
Yeah, so I don't know. Does Wanda ever see that? I mean, she's not there when he gets killed in, you know, Sokovia, but I guess she sees his body after everything is done, right?
I would assume so.
Hmm. All right.
I thought she witnessed it in Age of Ultron.
No, I think she felt it.
No, oh. it was just yes. Hawkeye that was there.
She got like a mental flash of it. Like, she knows exactly what happened, but you're right. She was not present for it, because that's when she wigged out and blew up all the Ultron bots.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. She was not there to see it herself. She just got, I guess, his
she felt dying the twin powers.
Yeah, they had their twin powers activated.
You know, like if he, you know, burns his hand.
Twin magic.
Yeah, I remember those. Sean probably remembers those old Time Life commercials. With those, you know, unexplained mysteries where, you know, in New York, a twin a hot pan, and then, but her twin sister feels pain in Los Angeles.
Oh, I'm going to have nightmares now that you brought that up. Oh, shit. I remember those.
Unsolved mysteries, vividly. Tim. Sorry.
I remember those fucking vividly. But yeah, I guess I think of that as more Wanda's impression than something that actually happened to him. Like, she's superimposing that image over him because that's the last thing she remembers of her brother. And why that occurred when it did seems significant.
Yeah. All right. So Darcy, she finds a file about something called Cataract in the computer and sees Vision on the radar. He's walking towards the edge of town. He then starts walking through the barrier with great effort, and parts of him start trailing backward as he pushes through. Darcy runs out and yells to the feds that they have to help him. For all that, she gets handcuffed to a car's grill for her troubles. We then go back inside the Hex, and Billy now is gaining some kind of his powers, where he's sensing what's happening, and that he's sensing that his father is, you know, in pain and trouble. And he turns to Tommy to say something is wrong. They run to Wanda, and Pietro makes a joke about her dead husband not dying again. Wanda, you know, really loses it here for a moment and tosses him with her power into the scenery. She then activates her power, and everyone in town freezes, including the movie playing on the screen. An energy pulse emanates from her. Jimmy and Monica driving away see the Hex expanding and hit the pedal to the metal, as do the feds. Darcy is abandoned while still cuffed as the Hex approaches her. We see Vision getting caught and reconstituting as a whole object, but every other person in vicinity gets wrapped up into the Hex. And, you know, we definitely see changes with the helicopter turning into a balloon, the base turning into a circus tent, all the agents turning into clowns and performers. And Darcy even, you know, gets engulfed. She does her best Ralphie impression with a so we didn't get to hear her finish her word. So we don't exactly know what happens to Darcy inside the Hex. Hayward and two other agents are driving away, and they're just narrowly escaping. And we zoom out and see the Hex has really become a lot bigger. And we get a close-up of Wanda. And then we get the stay tuned with, like, the whole, like, you know, I'm sure, like, you guys were like me. Like, heart rate was up and everything. And all of a sudden, it's like, bam, tune in next week to see what happens, Tim. So what do you think of the end of this episode?
Oh, God. All right, so what does Vision do? Vision tries to escape the town of Westview, walking, as you say, forcefully through the bubble. Let's tie that back to his conversation with Agnes, where she tells him, oh, you died, but you're an Avenger. You have to help us. You have to help us. And he reassures her, yes, I will help you. So really, it's at her urging. I mean, it seemed like he was kind of going to do it anyway, but she was maybe placed somewhere where they would have that interaction that ultimately pushes him into doing what he does, and that is forcing his way out of the bubble as his body is coming to pieces. Really chilling visuals. Like, that was upsetting, seeing him come apart like that. And my God, it took me back to Infinity War, which was a movie that was very unkind towards the character, the Vision. It just made me think, how many times are we going to kill this poor bastard, you know? And it's just pretty upsetting, honestly. And you think to yourself, well, why would Agnes want to urge Vision to leave this reality? Why would she want to do that if she's, like, quote-unquote, in on it? Well, that's because Wanda is going to respond in kind when she sees her husband dying as she tries to escape, and she expands the bubble. So I think whoever's controlling this, whoever's directing it, whoever gave Wanda the power or the inspiration to create this, wants to see it perpetuated, wants to see it continue to grow and engulf the outside world, wanted this to embiggen itself. And that's exactly what happened. And that's a great way to do it when she sees her husband in peril. So that's sort of what I'm hanging my hat on for this one. I didn't think I had a big grand unifying theory, but I sort of came to that as we talked it out. Billy being the one to save the day, kind of a nice hero moment for him, while his brother's, you know, acting extremely obnoxious, sort of true to the comics character that presumably he's echoing. I audibly gasped at Pietro's line where he just tells Wanda, hey, don't sweat it. It's not like your dead husband can die twice. Like, you don't say that to Wanda in this world. Like, what in the world?
I was shook. Like, just the way that he was so brazen and said that, and she, you know, blasts him. I don't know, just another one of those things that made me think that he's a real shit stirrer, and is maybe not a part of the not a part of the overall design.
So Tim, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
With her blasting him, do you think that's the last we saw of Pietro?
I don't. What I think happened was all this, everything goes down. Wanda expands the sphere, the circle, whatever, to effectively get Vision back into it and save his life. I think she also hit the reset button at the same time that makes everybody fall back into line, including Quicksilver, at least to some degree. I don't think it's going to stick. Like, we don't have but so many episodes left, so it's probably very tenuous, but I think what we saw there was her exerting her power, laying the smackdown on everybody that's stepping out of line here, doesn't know their role, and it's getting everybody to conform once again. We do know that we have, I don't think this is a spoiler, we've seen a preview, one sitcom homage left where it looks like she's doing the mockumentary thing, talking to the camera, a la Modern Family, you know, The Office. So this thing ain't over yet. We're still going to spend some time for, I guess, at least one more episode in this manufactured reality. And I just think she hit the hard reset button when she did what she did. But I also think that whoever is gaslighting her, whoever she made perhaps this bargain with, wants to see the world expand, which is what happened at the end. Sword, by the way, can die in a fire, just like the Fox X-Men movies, because they totally hung Darcy out to dry. Like,
yeah, what a bunch of cocksuckers.
Fuck, yeah, like, seriously. You know, it's such a, like, if you look at it, if you try to look at it realistically, it's like, okay, that's probably what would happen, but, you know, you have the power to not do that scene in a TV show where you can control all the things, and it's just such a visual shorthand to say these guys have no honor, they're total dicks, they suck. You know, they completely hung her out to dry and fled for their lives. Like, they, you know, fuck them. Like, I'm obviously, like, we are not supposed to sympathize with this organization in any form or fashion. I mean, the best they could do at the end of all this is just reboot it and say, all right, the old guard is out. We're under new management now. Like, that's really the only way they could salvage these douchebags.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sean, what do you think of the end of the episode?
I thought it was amazing. The Quicksilver thing, her just shooting. I mean, what a brazen little prick he was with that comment. And I don't blame Wanda for shooting him at all. But I thought it was a good question that Scott asked. Do you think he's still around? I do. And I agree with Tim on maybe hitting the reset button. I don't think this is the last we've seen of his Pietro whatsoever. I with Tim also on what Sword did to Darcy, how dare they do that to my one of my harem women. I thought that was very, very uncalled for that they did that to her. Very, very upset by that. And Sword could, you know, basically fuck off, assholes. The scope of her power in this is amazing, and I love how Tim kind of spun the web of Agnes and her role in this. That's, and thank you for kind of, you said it much more articulate than I could, so thank you for that. I agree 100% with Tim about her role in this and directed into this, because whoever's directing this whole scenario, the reason why he had Agnes there was to direct Vision out there, not because we want a Vision to die, but because he wanted Wanda to expand her power or her world even further than where she was. Because maybe this is someone that's trying to figure out how to manipulate Wanda to encompass the whole entire world. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just a theory or whatever, mm-hmm. to see what the scope of her powers is. But amazing finish. Amazing. Just, I mean, literally I had an oh shit moment on the Pietro, and I had a literal oh shit moment when she started expanding the hex. My jaw was dropping. So really great cliffhanger, and if the rumor is true and we got three more hours of this, it should be a hell of a great 3 hours.
All right. Scott, your thoughts on the ending?
I'm going to, what Sean said, Feige confirmed that the last three episodes are an hour apiece, Sean.
Yep.
So that's good news. I did like Billy getting his powers because he seemed like the little brother that was not going to get any powers. Tommy always seemed to pick on him, so I liked that, and he's the one that saved his dad. I do disagree, though, about the Agnes thing. Hopefully I'm wrong because that would be some 3D chess that Marvel's doing, but I just don't see it personally. But, you know, I'm not as in deep as you guys with the comics.
Tim, I know, you've got a hell of an outline for Agnes. I'm all in on that.
I know. It's just too many variables, and I agree. Sword, I gave you a shot, and you failed me, you pieces of shit. I love them being turned into circus because they're a bunch of fucking clowns.
Fucking clowns, exactly.
The circus was great. That was really good.
Yep. I'm interested to see how far she takes this now, how far is expanded out, and hopefully next episode we see Monica meet up with her the physicist that we think is Reed Richards. Yes. So hopefully that's next episode. I can't wait till Friday, guys.
Yeah. I don't think All Sword is bad. I think it's Hayward has an agenda for something.
They're all a bunch of bungling idiots. Stupid.
That's how they've kind of been presented. Like, if it was just him and it seemed like others were going against him, then I'd be like, yeah, one bad apple, whatever. But they just all look like, as Scott said, just a bunch of fucking clowns. Two things I thought. To back up that point, what was their reaction when Vision started to force his way out of the bubble? Darcy is urging them, help him. And we as viewers are saying the same thing in front of our television, going, fucking help him, pull him out. And they made no move whatsoever, right?
Yeah. Which, and also, Darcy, they were like tracking Vision for some reason. And Darcy was like, what are you hiding?
Mm-hmm,
yeah. So either there's something in Vision that they want to extract, and they don't care if he's dead or not, and they were hoping for that.
Well, I think Tim brought up in a past episode, is he some kind of weapon for a sword? I think.
Well, it blows up. You know, while your theories are getting blown up, Scott, one of my hopeful theories was maybe also blown up this episode, where I thought the experiments that they were conducting with Vision, that they were trying to repair him to get him back online in some way.
Hell no.
And now, now I'm thinking more like they were just trying to weaponize him, probably.
Yeah.
Which is the obvious cliche bullshit route you could, again, it's that tropey thing that we don't want to see in this type of show. And I guess where I was going with all that was, as he's emerging from the bubble, Darcy saying, help him, we're all screaming at the television, help him. They make no move whatsoever. They obviously don't want him alive. They have no interest in him. Like, he has no use to them, it seems like, if he's alive. They want him as, well, a toaster that they can experiment on at their will. So I think that's why they made no move whatsoever to assist him. I had another point that I'm starting to forget. No, it came back to me. As he was coming apart, right? He's starting to disintegrate. It begs the question, can he exist? Can he even exist outside of the world of WandaVision? The sense that I got from that was, yes, he can. The problem was, he didn't get enough distance from it. He was just getting sucked back in. But if he was forcibly removed, I kind of think that this Vision could potentially continue to exist. Now, will that happen? Maybe not, but I do think that the possibility exists. I think that he was just being pulled back in by magical gravimetric force, whatever you want to call
gravitational
it.
Gravitational hex pull.
Yes, thank you. Gravitational hex pull was drawing him back in. It's not that he couldn't continue to live, but it just did not want him to leave and was not allowing him to leave. But if there's some way to do that, maybe we're onto something there.
Yeah, I think the what's in the file name Cataract, that's what, you know, they want Vision for. And
Cataract. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the key right there to what Hayward is up to, really. Because Cataract has to do with the eyes and Vision. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all related. It's just, what is the code name really mean? So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, what do we expect to happen in episode 7? Sean, we have about 3 hours left of this story to get to. What
and probably of this podcast.
this
episode.
This episode, or yeah, I was going to say.
Well, with this, everything going to an hour, that means we're going to have 4 hours of recap every episode. Okay. I don't know where it goes from here. Clearly, we're going to see Monica get her powers at some point. We're going to see who this astrophysicist that's not Reed Richards that everybody thinks it is, because I don't think it will be. I think that's too easy. We're obviously going to see what happens after everybody's encompassed. We'll see what happens to Darcy. And eventually, we're going to see what happens to Quicksilver. Everything's going to play out over the next 3 hours. So I don't want to speculate, because I feel like we did a lot of that tonight. Really about how this expansion of Wanda's powers and how it affects the rest of the show.
Yeah. All right. Scott, what do you see coming up in at least the next episode?
Next episode is going to be the reboot episode that Tim spoke about, except we're not going to see any of the outside world. It's going to be all the newcomers to this world and how they get along with everyone else. I don't know if it's the mockumentary style episode that we get, but it's definitely going to be, I think it's all going to take place in this world. But the end of the episode is going to be, because I saw a preview for it watching something this weekend, and it looked like kind of like, if you played the Mass Effect games, it looked like this thing called a Mako was being driven into the Hex. And the Mako is just like this, looks like a mini bus thing, little VW bus, and it looks like it's being driven in there. So I think it's going to end with that, and the last two episodes are going to be the good guys and the bad guys facing off, and who's on which side, I don't know. But I think the next episode is not this, it's going to be the reboot episode.
All right. Tim?
I could see them doing an all sitcom follow-up episode. I kind of hope they don't, just because that would feel almost like a retread, like we've kind of been there, done that. And also, if it is an hour, then that's sort of asking a lot. I mean, unless it's titled something like a double-sized season premiere or something like that. You know how they get cute with these episode titles. So I kind of hope that's not what it is, just because we get it. Like we need some forward momentum. We don't want to, which we're getting. We're getting quite a bit of that. You don't want to slow that down. God, that would feel like a overstuffed Netflix series, which had always at least three too many episodes per season, it felt like. I don't think we need to do that here. So that is not my hope. Although I wouldn't be shocked. Do we meet this famed astrophysicist yet?
Well, that's on where they're on their way to go, is to meet up with him.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I mean, we kind of need to, if we're going to see them at all. Otherwise that would really feel like dragging our feet. So I'm really hoping we go ahead and get that reveal. Should we place bets on who we think that? Should we go ahead and do that? Should we place our bets, cards on the table? Who do we think that?
I have zero clue. I don't think it's Reed Richards, because I think that's too obvious. But Tim, I know you have a theory too, and I feel like that one's too simple. So I have no idea.
John Krasinski is the rumored actor.
Saying it's not Reed Richards.
I don't think it is either. I think this is too big a character to. We already have enough big. I mean, look, Wanda started off as a minor character and really has taken over the MCU for now, at least. You know, who would have thunk? That, you know, we meet this, you know, basically she was described as weird the first time we have her in a movie. Right. And yeah, I think Reed Richards is too big a character, because he's basically going to, I guess, replace Tony Stark. And
well, maybe... I don't know if I agree with that. I think the Fantastic Four movies have been so graciously shit over the years.
But that, I don't consider that. Look, I literally, you know, at the end of the last one, I was with my kids. I literally, when they were talking about, like, what are we going to call ourselves? I audibly, in the movie theater, went, who writes this shit? Like,
I feel like you could introduce them on TV because of the shit, but I feel like, to your point, it's too big of a deal or too obvious, you know?
Yeah, I think he's going to usurp, you know, Tony Stark is gone. Oh, you know, he sacrificed. Don't let Jenny hear you say that. you know, he.
Oh, there's lots of ways to bring him back, but to your point, there are. Yes. He's gone for now.
And so yeah. I think, you know, the Stark Tower is going to become whatever, I forget what it's called.
Please don't tell me that.
Yeah, Baxter Tower is going to become the Baxter Building. That's the rumors. There's all. Yeah, look, I'm not a comics guy. This is basically somebody who is just, you know, along for the ride and is trying to figure things out their way.
The A gets turned into a 4.
Yeah, you know, well, I don't know. Yeah. But I just think Reed Richards is going to be a pivotal part of the MCU going forward and the Avengers going forward. So I think his introduction has to be somewhere else.
I am so disgusted. You know, I hate the Fantastic Four.
Look, with all due respect. No,
you're fucking wrong.
No,
I fear you're not. That's why I'm reacting this way.
No, I definitely think that is, they are going to, we know that they're going to bring in the Fantastic Four.
They've already announced it.
Yeah, they've already announced it. And probably Reed Richards is going to slot into that Tony Stark character type, would agree with. I also do think that that's too big a reveal for this Disney Plus series. Now, I know the rebuttal to that right away is, well, they put Luke Skywalker in the fucking Mandalorian finale. Hard to get much bigger than that. Yes, but context. Let's step aside and look at context, folks, which is this, number one, is not a Star Wars series. Number two, which, you know, Star Wars didn't exactly have the kind of goodwill that the Marvel Cinematic Universe had when it's Disney Plus original.
Well, we don't know. with the exception of Mandalorian, before they had the big announcement at the Disney Con, whatever the hell you wanted to call it, you know, we didn't know what was going on with Star Wars. We know there's a Phase 4. We know of all these previously announced shows, movies, and stuff like that. So this is just part of the machine, basically.
Right.
They needed, I think, Luke Skywalker to kind of like reestablish.
Yeah. Star Wars is in a rebuilding phase in the way that the MCU is not. And I just think that you also have to keep in mind, this was not even supposed to be the first MCU Disney Plus series. This was going to follow Falcon and Winter Soldier, right? So, I mean, unless they went back and did major reshoots and changed things around, I think the show that we're watching was the show as it was going to be originally presented, which was not intended to be the first exposure to the Marvel Cinematic Universe that we've had in almost 2 years, right? This is just supposed to be, as you said, another cog in that system, Andy. Just continuing things along would be well received, do cool stuff, but wasn't going to necessarily hit you with a bombshell like a major character reveal. So I think we have to keep some of that original context in mind. So I'm sort of poo-pooing the Reed Richards theory. I mean, wouldn't shock me, I suppose, because they could frankly do anything they want. But I don't see it going there for all these various reasons. I think it could be somebody like, and this is one I just thought of, an Abigail Brand, who we think of from the comics as the main head honcho director of S.W.O.R.D., who's been somewhat conspicuously absent now that we are like actually seeing Sword. So maybe this is somebody who's going to, again, take over the organization, rebuild it into a somewhat more virtuous force than what we've been exposed to throughout the run of this show, WandaVision. And I also thought of a character no one's ever heard of called Dr. Super Astronaut Peter Corbeau, who is a deep, deep cut, admittedly, from the comics, closely associated with the X-Men, however. As a matter of fact, was instrumental in kind of assisting the team throughout the original Phoenix saga. So if you want to go there, I mean, if we're going to continue hinting at mutants and having these little Easter eggs and nods to X-Men continuity, you could do a lot worse than that guy, considering when you hear the term astrophysicist, there aren't a lot of characters that immediately jump to mind from Marvel Comics.
Okay. Sean, anything rebut on that or add?
Your Fantastic Four theory sounds like it could happen. I have never been a Fantastic Four fan. I feel like they're just a boring family. I like the Thing and the Human Torch. I could do without any Reed Richards and any Sue Storm whatsoever. So, but in saying that, I know it's a reality. They got to bring him into the universe. If the rumor is true and it's John Krasinski, I don't feel like that's necessarily a bad casting deal. I think that's pretty solid, actually, casting, because that's something that people have wanted for years. But again, I'm not going to speculate on who it is because I don't think it's either or, and I just don't have an answer. I have no theory on who that might be at this point. I'm stumped.
I'd love to be wrong.
Dr. Doom wasn't, right?
Somebody that big.
What's that?
Dr. Doom wasn't involved in, like, astrophysicists, right? He was a different kind of...
Well, him and Reed were both in... I don't know. They could probably milk that into it if they really wanted to.
Yeah, that's who I was going to say. Either Dr. Doom or... I know he wasn't an astrophysicist, but pretty sure he is a doctor. Dr. Hank McCoy, which is known as Beast. But I truly think it's going to be Reed Richards, but I'm just throwing out some other names that I, you know...
Other doctors, Doc Octopus, who knows?
Yeah, that's true. So I was just, yeah, that's just.
Isn't there a Dr. Druid, too? What's the Avengers? Dr. Druid, whatever.
Dr. Dre.
Could be Dr. Dre.
Dr. Pepper,
he's only useful when Captain America turns into a werewolf, Sean.
Yes, yes.
All right, well, this is why we love, you know, this series. We love doing this podcast because we just have so much fun with it. And it is really a treat for me because it's so much fun to have, you know, guys who know a lot more about the source material than I do to kind of educate me. And I can throw my goofy theories out as well. And they can tell me whether I'm correct or if it's doo-doo shit. So
unfortunately, your Reed Richards theory is not out of the realm of speculation, even though it is doo-doo shit, if that's who it is.
Hey, like I said, I'd love to be wrong. I'd love for it to be someone that big, because I kind of agree with Sean that Fantastic Four pretty much have no appeal beyond, I don't know, the late 1960s, but if anybody could do them right, it's going to be the MCU. Correct. They've had a lot of bad outings. Their first movie from the 90s with zero budget was probably their best, which is saying quite something, considering that they've had three movies since then. And
they've never been done right, and maybe this is the opportunity to do it right. I don't know.
Yeah. You can't say that. It's not like there's been like that's the most faithful they could have been to a Fantastic Four movie, and it still sucked. Like,
and let's not forget, in the last Fantastic Four movie, Killmonger was the Human Torch, if we all remember that. So,
that's true.
Yeah, they desperately needed to recast. Anyway, that was got Miles Teller and
Captain America was Human Torch in the other one.
Yeah,
Kate Mara.
Yeah, Kate Mara and Jessica Alba was not a good Sue Storm. I mean, literally, I heard Emily Blunt you know, Krasinski's wife could be Sue Storm.
That'd be all right. See, I'd be okay with that.
I mean, I was down with, for the look of Sue Storm from what I've known from the comics, and I was going to Alicia Cuthbert for a long time, but, you know, maybe she doesn't have the chops for it, you know, or, you know, whatever.
I mean, the cast wouldn't really be a problem. It doesn't seem like a difficult movie to cast. You've just got to get the right slant for it, the right angle, the right script. You know, and they haven't done that yet. Like I said, closest they came was that doo-doo shit bootleg movie from the 90s, which was, you know, just a licensed, like a rights play, basically. It never was meant to be seen by anyone or released. But check it out on YouTube if you haven't seen it. I'm sure it's still out there. It's bad, but like I said, still kind of better than any of the other ones that they were in.
All right, so... So we have three more episodes to cover, which we will bring to you, you know, within a few days of airing. And as well as there has been a rumor for a big, you know, person, a big reveal in the show, we might have a big reveal, a big special guest star for our final episode for the season. So stay tuned.
Oh, is it Reed Richards?
he won't return my text, guys. I'm sorry.
He's too busy dealing with the hex.
Yes. Yeah, he's too busy, you know, trying to you know, he's too mad at cleaning the bathroom after the thing uses it. I don't know. Anyway, so.
What a visual.
Yes. All right.
Wow, what an ending to this one. This is a great ending to the show.
I bet you our guest is Magneto. Cleaning the bathroom after Toad uses it.
Oh, Beast. What was it? Wasn't that in Deadpool? Like, you know, tell Beast to stop shitting on my lawn or something? I don't know. All right. Now we've kind of got off the deep end. It's late. Kind of punchy. So we're going to end the episode. So I want to say thank you to Sean, Scott, and Tim once again for getting together on Pop Goes the Couch. WandaVision, we were breaking down the spooktacular Halloween episode, which was a lot of fun, and we look forward to breaking down the last three of the season, starting with episode 7 a week from now. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you then. Take care.